This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at UH1.com.
Truth and Movies. This time it's war. Today we look through Aliens darkly with Alien Covenant, the latest tale of colonists getting their colons colonised. It's Ridley Scott, but is it Ridley good? Also, The Leveling, Hope Dixon Leach's extraordinary debut film about what happens when a young man inherits the farm and then buys it. Plus, Film Club, Aliens 3 Controversy Ahoy, and a brand new cast member. It's Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us again on this third edition of Truth and Movies. David Jenkins returns.
Hi there. But
we have a new cast member, as I was mentioning. You are?
Sophie Mentz-Kaufman.
Great. And who are you, Sophie?
Well, I am the contributing editor of Little White Lies and also a filmmaker.
Are you?
Yeah.
Blimey. Bit of perspective on things then. We've got some interesting films to talk about. Let me just deal with the contents of our bulging postbag. First of all, remember we do invite you to get in touch. Truth and Movies, all one word, at tcolondon, all one word, .com is the email address, or quite simply at LW Lies on Twitter. Paul Plant says, listening to the first LW Lies podcast, two lads you're with sound right miserable sods, David. It's a bit harsh.
That's fine. I'm happy.
You're not
with
a miserable
that.
Sod
no,
at all.
I'm happy. That's my brand.
But if you had to pick an adjective to describe David with, Sophie, what would it be?
Pernickety.
I think those two traits go hand in hand. And right. I'm proud of that.
Okay. Po-faced Egypt was another description.
Same. I'm happy.
You're happy with that, yeah.
That's
so let's go to something a little bit more positive. Here's David Barragan, Loving. Podcast so much better than other film podcasts based on in-jokes and superhero fanboy news.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it?
Okay, I'm just trying to think of an in-joke.
I think we made them. He just didn't get them.
Oh, right, okay.
That's the thing. Robin Graham is talking about evolution of sitcoms or TV shows into movies. David, with his po-face on, suggested that there were no good ones. But Robin Graham says, hey, what about In the Loop? Which was begat by The Thick of It. Well, that's a good example, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, no, that's quite a good one. I guess when I was saying that, when I made that kind of sweeping statement back then, that I was thinking in percentages, really.
Right.
Like,
in
election cycles, it's like if TV shows into films was a kind of political candidate,
right.
It would be a landslide
against
them.
It would lose its deposit.
Oh, big time.
Right, okay. Thanks for that, Robin. And also Snowbass, who says, quite interesting review. He's very polite, Snowbass. He says, quite interesting review of the Guardians Volume 2 movie, but I feel a bit sheepish as I like the movie. I felt it was a large story about a movie made up of little family encounters by each character, which worked. Snowbass, you and me both, I really enjoyed. Did you see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Sophie?
I did not. It's not really in my wheelhouse.
Is it not? If you go along, you'll really enjoy it.
No, I get my money back off you if I don't?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, now, we'll have lots more of your comments when we get onto this week's film club, which was Alien 3. But that's later on, because now, this.
You've all sacrificed so much to be here. To be a part of this. It's the first ever large-scale colonization mission to go this far into our galaxy. I'm making history. And everyone back on Earth is really grateful for your hard work and your courage. I just want to say I couldn't pick a better bunch of jerks to get marooned on a distant planet with. So,
to the Covenant!
To the Covenant!
Catherine Waterston, their daughter of Sam, in part of the prologue material that the studio released ahead of Alien Covenant's arrival in theatres. Interesting tactic there. Basically, Covenant is set 10 or 11 years after the events of Prometheus in the year 2104, and it follows the crew of the ship Covenant, who are headed off to a remote planet with a cargo of 2,000 colonists, but who intercept a random radio signal and get diverted to a mysterious planet. And of course, that works out really well for them. It's an interesting cast. You've got Michael Fassbender, lots of him. Catherine Waterston, as I mentioned. Billy Crudup's there. Danny McBride, and a kind of big ensemble crew. It was described by Little White Lies' review as a Brock monster movie that's better than Prometheus. Sophie, what did you think?
Okay, so going in, I had pretty low expectations. And I think if you have low expectations, a film simply being good is quite a revelation. So also, I saw it in a large IMAX screen, and I think it's a film that's greatest strength is its aesthetic. It's just, it's like that, those charcoal greys, those steel blues, caves dripping, these screams echoing around caves. It's very atmospheric, very bleak. Mm. In fact, I've coined a term, bleak chic, because I think a lot of sci-fi films now, like Rogue One and even the Nolanverse, they've got this very dark aesthetic. So it looks really good. And just in narrative terms, I think it takes a while to show its hand, and it's very lean and mysterious, and you're kind of wondering where it's going.
Mm.
So it's quite compelling. So yeah, I had fun with it. Like, there's some great existential hammy lines, those great ideas about mankind. And I don't know whether it explores those ideas per se, but there are enough of them dotted across that you can hook in. And I enjoyed it.
Well, that's good, with magnificently low expectations. But I must admit, after Prometheus, given that it was the same director, Ridley Scott, he's 79 now, and he's going to make two more of these. But anyway, I was stunned at what an entertaining film this was. And he cited the fact that his business is entertainment in various interviews that he's been doing, with the release of this film. But it was a good ride, wasn't it, David?
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, yeah, I mean to be on the kind of Prometheus downer train with you guys as well. I'm very much there, and like the cast, they basically head to the same planet that we've seen in Prometheus, and that for me, the very fact of the cast being there, it is that kind of like memory of the original worst bad film, which
did
kind
it
of...
make Prometheus better for you watching this film?
No. I felt after watching this that it almost nullified Prometheus.
Right.
It kind of deals with it in the subtext and a few small lines and a few bits of exposition, to the point where I thought there is no reason to see Prometheus to understand this film and to enjoy this film.
Because this has got bits of Prometheus, and it's got bits of, I would say, maybe Aliens as well. Doors not closing fast enough, guns being handed out, all that. But it's got massively, massively parts of the original Alien from way back in 1979. It's very much back on that theme, as opposed to all the kind of slightly more philosophical stuff that was going on in Prometheus.
I think it kind of apportions it quite nicely. So you've got, like, I think you've got your kind of fun tent setup where they're, as you say, the beacon is heard. They're having their little conversation. Oh, shall we go and rescue them or shall we not? And you're just sort of like rolling your eyes going, come on, just get on with it. And then you've got this chunk of acting in the middle. So you've got your sort of your fun and then your acting and then your fun. And it's quite a nice sort of payoff, really. It's like, I mean, it's not just the fun throwaway watching people getting slaughtered and in sort of interesting ways. You've actually got this sort of chunk in the middle that that sort of chin-stroking critic types can look at and go, oh, yeah, that's really good. Let's give people Oscars. Oscars? People have been saying Oscars.
Have they been saying Oscars for this?
For the Fasses.
For Fassbender?
Yeah.
That's nuts.
I'm sorry, that's nuts.
Is that too crazy?
I mean, the thing is, Fassbender is that you expect such a great level of performance from him, and he doesn't disappoint, but it's like... he's definitely not at peak. He's having a little bit of fun with it. It's like a cheeky, I'd say it's a cheeky Fassbender
right.
performance.
It's slightly pantomime, do you think?
Yes.
It's a bit Vincent Price, I thought.
Right, yeah, well, there's an interesting comparison. What's your favourite Fassbender performance?
Shame, all the way. Steve McQueen's Shame, in which he plays a tortured sex addict, Brandon. It's amazing. It's actually one of my favourite films.
There you go. Well, this is very, very dark, but as I say, it's very much back to being an entertainment as opposed to, say, a head-scratching exercise in I'm going to imbue my old films with meaning.
Wiki philosophy.
Yeah.
I think the Alien movies, it kind of perpetuates that philosophy over all the films, this idea of, like, the alien itself being the kind of master race, unkillable ubermensch, except every damn time, it's curtains for the alien. I mean, like, you know, it's like, why are you still doing this when it's clear six times over that humans is clearly superior? Even with acid blood, we've just got ways around it.
You know,
we can deal with it.
That's like, if Ridley Scott really had the courage of his convictions, there'd have been no humans after Alien, and it would just be like aliens evolving.
Well, exactly. I would say that plot-wise, this is actually, you know, without giving anything away, pretty bold. Two things which our producer Tom brings up is he says Prometheus was full of plot holes, which put him mildly. Does this plot hold up?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, it only holds up because it's a kind of back to basics thing.
Right.
You know, they dial back the sort of philosophy and the sort of windbaggery, should we say, of police Prometheus.
Right. And much as the series is evolving, so the xenomorphs are too. What's this alien like? Ask producer Tom. Sophie?
Ooh, I'm very into this alien. First of all, it moves so quick. It's like charging, galloping through these lands. And I one thing I love about the alien look is this sort of spermy, amniotic postures that it bursts out of. And when I was looking at the alien, it was reminding me of Jurassic Park, just the way it would just be there and the person would only realise they had bad company just too late. It also kind of reminded me of the Pale Man in Pan's Labyrinth. So, yeah, it's a very sleek but very gloopy monster, and it feels very dangerous. Like, there are some incarnations of aliens that are just very silly. I think we'll get onto that later in the show, but this is a sleek, nasty beast.
Well, do you want to give us some scores, Sophie, for your Covenant experience?
I wish I could give half points, but I can't.
Go on.
Okay, I can.
You can. Radio allows that.
Oh, wow. Okay, so in that case, I'm going to go to town. Expectation, 1.5.
Ooh.
Enjoyment, 3.5. Ooh. In retrospect, 3.
Really? What about you, Dave?
Do you know what? I'd go similar to that, yeah. I mean, yes, extremely low expectation and was pleasantly surprised and found there was a few moments where I was kind of curling toes and, you know, don't walk in that door kind of moment. And I'd like that. And the fast was very enjoyable.
Yeah.
But I'm not hankering to take another bite of it, you know, go back there. I mean, I've seen it.
Yeah.
And I had a nice time and that's me done.
You wait till they release a special edition.
Yes.
Yeah.
But with 50 extra minutes of people running around.
Right. For me, I'm no film critic, obviously, but I really enjoyed it. Wasn't expecting too much, but thought for what it is, and as I say, there's a slight scale back of ambition for Prometheus. For what it is, I thought it was excellent. If somebody was saying, shall I bother going to see Alien Covenant, what would you say?
I'd say definitely go and see it.
Sophie, would you agree?
I'd say go and see it at the cinema.
Yeah, big screen. Because it does, I mean, that's the bottom line. It looks fantastic. Bleak chic, as I like to call it.
Can I just mention one more thing that I really liked about it, which affected my enjoyment and maybe pushed it up by that one half?
Ooh.
It was actually Catherine Waterston's hairstyle.
Oh.
That looked very, it was a kind of in spiral carpets.
Okay,
baggy
yeah,
hairstyle,
right.
Which I was trying to understand why that decision was made. And, you know, there is a sort of androgynous element to it, I guess, and sort of harking back to Ripley, who has her hair head shaved. And
it's interesting, though, that the Ripley, you pick up on that, and Ridley, there's only one continent of difference between those two. To what extent is Ridley Scott projecting himself into the role made famous by Sigourney Weaver? That'll have to be for another.
That's really interesting. That's going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Would it be all right if I just quickly brought us out of the rabbit hole and advanced on David Jenkins' remarks and Catherine Waterston? Because actually, I think one out of my 3.5 points is for her performance. And I guess it's a fairly generic role, but she imbues it with so much feeling. There's a, without saying too much about the ending, the final shot of her like, it's just seared into my mind. She's a very interesting actress. You know, she's had these few roles. She was in Inherent Vice by Paul Thomas Anderson. And then she's great in this two-hander with Elizabeth Moss about two women kind of driving each other insane. And so she's definitely someone to watch. And it's, yeah, like her presence in this film just kind of gave it a bit more humanity.
What was she in? She was in something else recently.
She was in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So she's kind of started off on the indie route in Inherent Vice and Queen of Earth, and now she's been bringing her indie credo to the Hollywood masses.
Nice. Excellent. All right, well, next up, we're going to talk about that levelling thing. Yes, also hitting UK cinemas this Friday the 12th, is debut feature of filmmaker Hope Dixon Leach. Story about a trainee vet who returns to her family farm after she hears of the death of her brother. And in the week that builds up to the brother's funeral, she pieces together the events which have led to this tragic end.
It's just a bloody stupid accident.
So you gave the farm to Harry?
You left.
You told me to go. You told me to get the hell out of here.
No, I didn't.
I don't want this to be your fault! Not again.
Get out. Get the hell out!
Daddy!
Performances here from Ellie Kendrick, who plays Mira Reed in Game of Thrones. David Troughton, who's the father, and Jack Holden, who's a kind of family friend, who I thought was absolutely brilliant. It is an amazing debut. David, what would you like to say about it?
I think I'd just like to say, yeah, I concur. I think it's an amazing film, but it's amazing in a very kind of, in a very unselfconscious way, shall we say. It doesn't feel like it's a film that's trying too hard to be amazing, and it does very simple, robust things with drama and character and acting and the sort of drip feed of information and when people realise what other people are feeling. This director, Hope Dixon Leach, has really, really thought hard about everything in this film, like everything she's going to show, every twist, every turn, every sort of reaction is kind of loaded with meaning. And you know, it's barely 80 minutes, which is kind of rare for cinema these
days. Yeah, I love that about it.
But it was just like, this is the time that I needed to spend with this film. And it packed everything into that 80 minutes. And I really loved it. I mean, it's, you know, beyond this idea of a kind of daughter returning home to her farm to sort of, I guess, deal with this turmoil and breakdown that's happening there, I think it has a sort of broader political sense to it as well, in that, you know, it's a really great film about this chasm between the generations. You know, you've got the young girl who's off doing her own thing, has her own ideas, is independent, and then you've got the father who is kind of trapped in this kind of cycle and of the sort of farming industry, and has these very, and it felt like a very now movie about the kind of this sort of generational divide. I mean, someone described it as Manchester by the Sea meets The Archers. I mean, is that too...
No, I think that's good.
Yeah?
That I'd buy that pitch, yeah. Sophie, what do you think?
It's just incredibly impressive. It's a slow burn, like he says. You know, it's like not trying to dazzle you from the beginning. So it took me about 20 minutes to realise that I was invested. But from that point on, it's just, it's working. And I think for me, great cinema is working on a level of atmosphere in as much as it's working on a level of plot and character. Mm. And Hope Dixon Leach does this amazing thing, not in an over-the-top way at all, but this landscape, this Somerset landscape, the mood and what the characters are going through is one of grief, and this foreboding is reflected in the skies, which are just dark, and the things at the farm, which they're just not going right with their livestock, and things are just kind of a bit off in a way that makes sense in the location, but it also makes sense for what the characters are going through. So not only are you reacting to events as you find out about them on a plot level, you're feeling them, they're seeping into you because of the whole tone of the frame.
Mm. I was curious all the way through as to why it was called The Levelling. And I'd hope there was going to be an obvious, as opposed to like some clever answer that I wouldn't quite be able to get. But then I read that it's set in the Somerset Levels. Is that what that's about?
I think so, yeah. Right.
Case closed.
Okay. I mean, it's beautifully shot, beautifully composed, and it's really compact as well, very concise. I also really like the way that it kind of nails that English manner of not actually saying what you're feeling, which is completely crucial to the whole storyline.
Absolutely. And another film I thought of as a reference, it's kind of like a reserved English version of Lars von Trier's Melancholia, in that, you know, you're getting the character's mood through what they cannot say. And it's so, like, as well as the father-daughter relationship meaning something on a political level, it's just immensely meaningful on a personal level. Like, too often, the people that we're closest to is the hardest to talk to them. And the characterization, the young girl is very sensitive, very nervous. She's a vet student. She cares about animals. You know, you can see, like, you can see all her feelings. They're sort of quivering on the surface. Her dad is more of a, like, put a brave face on, make a stupid joke kind of guy. And watching as a viewer, you can see he's doing that as a way of keeping himself together. But you can also see why it's pushing her buttons. And you can see how they're just not able to comfort and console each other, and that it's making going through this nightmare so much more lonely. So it's just very heart-rending, not heart-rending through music cues, heart-rending through just watching people in a naturalistic setting, right, struggling to connect.
Yeah, it's another film that uses silence a lot rather than, say, dramatic music to establish mood.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I sort of was watching it and it sort of builds, it has this sort of sense of tension that comes through this fact that you kind of feel at any moment any of the characters could, like, kill themselves. Not in a sort of, like, obvious, you know, looking at a shotgun or, you know, looking at an open window or something like that. There is that kind of hair trigger sense of these people are on the edge, you know, like, and it could just go, it could go in a crazy direction at any point. So, like, it's very compelling in that sense. And it's, you know, it's as a way to replace all the kind of razzle dazzle. It just does this very simple thing of, like, you know, you want to see how this turns out.
And people should go and see how it turns out, David, yes?
Oh, I really think so,
Give it a score.
I would give it anticipation. I was like, you know, it had been to the festivals and I didn't really know that much about it. So maybe 3 for anticipation, would you say?
Yeah, 3.
I would give it a 5.
Five.
Yeah, straight up. I just thought it was really, like, you know, it's maybe not reinventing the wheel in dramatic terms, but I think it's like, it's kind of building its own new platinum wheel for the cart.
All right, Sophie, what numbers would you give it?
Okay, so I'd give it 3 for anticipation because it's hard to get too excited about someone whose work you haven't seen before. Then 4 for enjoyment, and then a kablamo 5 in retrospect.
Oh, right. Because it stayed with you percolating in your brain.
Absolutely. And the finale is like just, it sends you, like, the
with
finale.
With the spaceship.
Oh,
you know?
God. Yeah, just, yeah.
Where the alien comes and gets
and
them in the shower.
And the xenomorph kills us all.
And hey, what great performances, particularly from Ellie Kendrick and Jack Holden, who apparently is going to be alongside Paul Bettany and Toby Jones in a film adaptation of Journey's End, you know, the First World War drama.
Oh, wow.
That should be good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought they were incredibly naturalistic performances.
No, especially Ellie Kendrick. It was an unshowy performance.
Right.
I hope people don't overhear the word unshowy and find it a turn off.
Right. No, it's, you know, it's definitely worth seeing.
Yes,
the levelling. There's another unshowy production up next on Truth and Movies, as this week's instalment of Film Club features Alien 3. That's after this.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ah! Come on!
The suspense is back.
And we have no weapons of any kind?
The fear is back.
Ah! Don't look back, dude! Run as fast as you can! Ah!
And most of all, the bitch is back. Alien 3.
The original trailer there for Alien 3. Boy, that's, yeah, you'd go and see that movie, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, I like that kind of sound effect they use of, like, metal bars hitting against each other.
Mm.
That industrial, I think that's
right.
Called.
Okay. Now, Sophie, you and I watched the so-called assembly cut, which is the longer version for our sins. And David, you saw the shorter version. You have also spoken to David Fincher, and you asked him about this film. What did you ask him?
Oh, I had an opportunity to ask him right at the very end of an interview a kind of funny question about why all the convicts in Alien 3, which is set in a prison, are British character actors. And he gave a sort of a little wry smile and a wink and didn't say any words.
Right.
As if to say, you know why.
Right. And he's, because there's been so much discussion about this film, how horrible it was to make, how horrible the studio were to him. There's this Wreckage and Rage kind of documentary about the backstory in which people are continually saying the studio got him in and then were undermining him. But he doesn't speak about any of that.
No. When the Blu-ray came out, he was basically, you know, he's the only big dog who's not involved in any of it.
Right.
You know? He wants nothing to do with it. But I think I've seen him. When people ask him questions, he will politely answer them.
Really? So. Or just smile and wink?
Yeah, yeah, or in my case, yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, you've got a very winkable face. So, as you say, it's on a prison planet, Fury 161, a maximum security prison, and Ripley crashes there. It turns out she's not alone. She's not alone. So if you and I, as I say, we watched the longer version, you've got a series of bullet points as to why you hated it so much.
Yeah, I was so mad. I was so bored that I got angry. It's tonally off. That's one.
If you could count these down, that would be like handy for people writing these
one,
out.
One, tonally off.
Yes.
Two, lots of cheesy TV cuts. So at the big moment, you go elsewhere to clumsily prolong the drama. Three, aliens not scary. They look like, I don't know, in the 90s there was a mania for making zines. It just looks like they were cut and pasted out of a magazine.
Did you see the first 1992 that they tried doing one of the aliens with, I think it was a Cocker Spaniel, that they put some alien makeup on the dog and had that run around for a bit?
That would have been scarier.
That's in the theatrical cut.
Oh, really?
So the dog is in the theatrical cut. You see the dog explode.
Brilliant. Oh, not literally.
More reasons why I hate it.
Yep, come.
The deaths are low stakes, as there are no characters to speak of, bar Ripley and Clemens, played by the piercing-eyed Charles Dance. And the moments he were in it were like a little reservoir to a woman in the desert of 2 hours and 20 minutes of no content, and then they killed him off. And my final fifth point is that the tension is non-existent.
Right.
And you
but
can
apart from that, sorry. Mrs. Lincoln. Yeah. Do you know, the funny thing is we invited people to comment and loads of people have got in touch. A lot of people with really positive things to say. Rich Cubitt actually prefers this one to Aliens, which I'm surprised about, but he says it's closer to the horror atmosphere of the original movie, which I guess is a fair point. Pop-up Puppet Cinema says it's better than its rep and there are some truly beautiful shots in it. Rigger Studio, the assembly cut, is one of my favourites from the whole Alien franchise. Martin McHugh, ever so much better on all levels than the ridiculous guns blazing aliens. I guess it is a matter of taste. My take was, as you mentioned, there's no memorable characters. The entire cast, apart from Charles Dance, who meets an untimely end, and Ripley, is composed of vaguely identical, shaven-headed, sweary sex offenders who are in this max. And I can't remember any of their character names. I have no idea what they want to do. Whereas in Aliens, it was all about Vasquez and Hicks and Hudson trying not to buy it on this rock. There was a clear motivation. You knew what the characters wanted to do, and that's what made you invest in their efforts for survival. With this lot, really, I had no interest in particular in how any of them survived. And given that Ripley is the only one who you care about, and she is declared invulnerable, the alien won't touch her. That's made clear early on in the film. That dramatic tension just disappears. Why do you think people like it?
Well, yeah, just to say, please don't come for my blood, lovers of Alien 3. I respect your rights, your own opinions, and I concur with whoever said there are some beautiful images, but I would say it's not enough to save a film.
David?
I mean, you know, I can tell you why people quite like the film, because I quite like the film.
All right, David. And you're a po-faced idiot, so that...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but this might feed into that image.
Okay.
Here's hoping. I do think it's quite nicely put together. And I mean, you know, David Fincher is like the ultimate Hollywood technician. His kind of thing is all about process. How like showing processes, showing things happening, showing how people turn into other things and do other things, and I think he does it really well in this film, and he does it really beautifully and very atmospherically. I think there's some real kind of funny 90s stuff there, where, you know, there's a sequence where a man is kind of clearing out this tube, and in the background you've got a kind of fan with the light coming through the fan, and it's got that kind of steel mill 90s steel mill aesthetic,
right,
which we all know and love. And I think you do get a sense of this prison that you're in, and the geography of it, where things are, where are the alien? The alien's somewhere out there, and we're in here. I do think it pretty much dies with Charles Dance. I think I definitely agree with that. I mean, my abiding memory of this film, it was a long time since I've seen it before this rewatch, but if someone said Alien 3 to me, my only image that would come into my head is like bald men running around a sewer. I mean, and like for ages.
Right.
I mean, like just shrieking it's just running through a sewer. And I mean, that's not great cinema. It could be, if you're making a film about bald sewer running.
It's just a shame, because if the original concept, William S. Gibson wrote a two-film treatment for the continuation of the Alien saga post-Aliens, which was going to feature Newton Hicks. So one of my issues was like, I can't believe they killed them off for this. Here's Daniel Brockley, who says, it was an odd choice placing so many British actors in this installment. It's quite distracting and out of touch with the rest of the series. I found it incredibly slow moving. There's no real discernible threat or character depth from the inhabitants of Fury 161. The only true moment of joy came with a very sweary line, which he quotes here. Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, a little bit more backstory. If you have seen the film, you might find Wreckage and Rage, the kind of documentary about the troubled production, quite interesting. Not only is there that William Gibson thing in there, but there's also the fascinating idea from the original director, Vincent Ward, that it should all be set on a religious colony of monks that were inhabiting a wooden satellite. It's a bizarre idea, which sadly the studio felt wasn't exactly what they wanted. But they did kind of inherit that whole religious kind of heaven and hell thing from that story and kind of stick it into David Fincher's version.
It's quite interesting, because I think I can't remember the times exactly, but Vincent Ward went on to make one of the all-time stinkers around the same time, and it has got that heaven and hell thing.
Which one was that?
It's a film called What Dreams May Come with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Where he's this, it's this kind of bizarre hippie fantasy thing with lots of kind of
his wife commits suicide. He has to journey into the limbo.
The abyss. Yeah. I mean,
whatfilmsmay.com was the website, and that always stuck with me.
Wow, that's a really interesting. I mean, were you a fan?
No.
Okay. No. Maybe Vincent Ward, had he done his wooden satellite planet film for Alien, may still be with us today as a creative force.
I think I would have preferred monks running around a sewer to prisoners running around a sewer.
Okay, all right.
You don't see that as often.
What, monks running around? That would have been in a fascinating juxtaposition, you know, futuristic xenomorph with the kind of slightly medieval monk aspect. But, yeah, sadly, the studio's decided to go with another vision.
You never know. We've got two more prequels to fill up. So, I mean, you know, there's monks still waiting on the subs bench.
That's true. I've actually seen all six of the Alien canon since we last spoke. And I bet you'd be fascinated to know where I'd put, you know, what order I'd put them in.
Absolutely
Rank.
Fascinated. Are you ready? Okay. Hit us.
This, for me, is number six, as in the worst. Then I'd go Prometheus. Then, in fourth last place, I'd put Alien 4, Resurrection, which is actually terrifically... Have you seen it recently?
Yeah, I rewatched that one.
Yeah, it's good fun, isn't it? It's very inventive. It's maybe too inventive for its own good.
That's when it turns into a kind of gore splatter flick, I think. You know, it's all about the kind of rubber and latex and...
Oh, and no, there's lots of visual play going on there. The underwater sequence, there's a lot of really interesting ideas visually. I mean, it's Jean-Pierre Jeunet, and what made me go back and watch it again was the fact that the screenplay is by Joss Whedon, who has pretty much decided, he set himself the task of quoting as much of the screenplay from Aliens as possible.
Yes.
So it's fun. If you're a fan of Aliens, there's much to enjoy. But anyway, that gets fourth on my list. Then I would go Covenant, then joint first Alien and Aliens. And Alien is still every bit as good.
I would tip Aliens above Alien.
Would you?
Yeah, just by a whisker.
Okay. I kind of would too. If I had to watch one of them on an intercontinental flight, it'd be Aliens. What's next on Film Club? David?
In our very hurried pre-game chat, we went through a couple of potential titles, and the one we landed on was Bong Joon-ho's The Host, which is a kind of Korean creature feature.
Mm.
It's kind of tying in with a new release coming out next week, which is the Anne Hathaway Manic Depression Godzilla film Colossal. And the fact, I guess, that Bong Joon-ho has also got a new film coming out that's going to be at the Cannes Film Festival called
Cannes
Okja.
Film Festival. Right. So. Anyway, so The Host, that's next week's film club. So grab a copy of that, watch that, and we'll discuss that next week. And it'll be fascinating to see what you think. At Little White Lies, or the email address, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com. Super. So Charles Brookman writes in, he says, hey, loving the new pod. Thanks ever so much, Charles. I've always had a soft spot for Aliens 3 for a couple of reasons. First being that it came out in my teen years, so was therefore my alien movie. The other is that it always brings to mind a great hip-hop LP from a fella called Deck Wrecker, which sampled the dialogue. And just to finish off, this is what it sounds like. Debt Wrecker, of course, with Secret Wars, with a Z. Now, let's talk about that Cannes Film Festival. What happens when you go to Cannes? Do you just kind of all romp from one screening to another as a big pack of people in sunnies and with notebooks?
That's such a beautiful image. There is like much more queuing than romping.
Oh.
It's standing around.
Is it?
There's a lot of standing around and waiting and watching and laughing as other people get angry because they're standing around.
Okay. If you had the choice, would you not go then?
Oh, no, no.
You enjoy it?
I love it.
Yeah, hells no.
The standing around, I guess, it does become a sort of tense precursor to seeing a big movie.
What, so you're why like, are you standing around?
Oh, because you have to queue to get into the films because not everyone can get into all the films.
Right,
so, like,
so there's a tension about
when
that.
You've got a new film by, say, Mr. Todd Haynes,
right,
of which there is one at this festival,
right,
you would, which is called Wonderstruck, you would do well to get in the queue damn early to make sure you've planted your flag and you're going to get in and you're going to see that movie.
Right, well, that's fantastic. You two can presumably tag team the queues. People have described this Cannes Film Festival, I've never been, but they say this is going to be the most exciting one in literally years. There's new films from Todd Haynes, from Polanski. There's four films featuring Nicole Kidman, which is quite bizarre. Sofia Coppola, that's one of them, with The Beguiled. Lynn Ramsey's got a new film out. Yorgos Lanthimos, who did Lobster, has got a new film. What else? Oh, Claire Denis of Beautravail. Yeah. Or Travail, rather. Yeah.
Travail.
So what film are you most excited about seeing on the Croisette this time?
Well, I'm very excited to see Sofia Coppola's The Beguiled. I just think she's just a genius. And having seen the 1971 version of The Beguiled, which is a very overwrought, very sexy potboiler, I'm very excited to see a feminine perspective of those heady themes.
I think I'm probably... This is going to sound terrible. I'm most excited about the Claire Denis film,
okay,
but I can't remember what it's called because its
called,
name's changed.
Oh, right. Well, currently, last time I looked, it was called Un Boussole Intérieur. It's a new comedy, perhaps surprisingly, given her previous work, starring Juliette Binoche and Gérard Depardieu.
Yeah, so that's a very exciting thing for me because, like, she's been working on a sci-fi movie that's written by Zadie Smith. And it stars Robert Pattinson.
No way.
So that's something that we've
got. But that's not this one.
That's not this one. I think that one's a bigger production, taking longer to do. I adore everything she does.
Really?
So there is a kind of... The likelihood of me not liking this film is just... Is non-existent.
How are you going to make sure you get tickets for it?
I'm just going to queue. Queue the hell up.
I mean, this again is a subject for another podcast, but there's a very elaborate hierarchy based on badge colours at Cannes.
Oh.
So the queuing is not just queuing, it's like there's different pens that you queue in depending on the status
what
given to
you. What
colour
badge will you have?
Well, we're campaigning to get an upgrade.
Oh, don't tell people that, because then when we don't get the upgrade,
right,
we're going to look
foolish. What Dan are you at the moment?
So I'm a lowly yellow. Which...
All right, and David?
I'm a lowly blue.
Oh, and how many colours are there?
Oh, God, there's like 10 colours or 7 colours or something.
Like, OK, so for example, I don't know, Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian.
He gets the God badge, the white badge.
Yeah, he's like ghost pass. He can he has his own entrance, personal entrance.
Brilliant. So
no
he can
queuing.
Just walk into whatever he wants and get up and leave halfway.
He can do
if
anything. I understand he can walk up to the festival director and slap him and say, I hate you, if he so wanted.
Right, OK.
And he would be immune.
Is there anything lower than a yellow badge, Sophie?
Well, I mean, there's an orange badge, but I think it's just for photographers. So I'm pretty much the lowest of the low.
I think lower than yellow is basically you here with nothing.
Not actually
not
going
being
at
there,
all.
Yeah.
All right, that's my choice.
Being like hundreds of miles away.
Yeah.
That's.
Well, I am going to be hundreds of miles away, and yet I'm going to feel connected to the Cannes Film Festival because you're going to be dialing in. We're going to speak to you on the phone.
Yeah, we're going to try and do that.
All right, and hopefully you'll have seen. Will you actually have seen something by then?
I think maybe not. We might have seen the opening film.
Oh, okay.
Which
What's
is
that?
Which is a new film called Ismail's Ghosts by a French director called Arnaud Desplechin, who's again a very great director, and I loved his last film, and I'm
what
really
was his
excited.
Last film?
It was called Our Golden Days, but it never came out here for some reason.
Oh, really?
But it was brilliant. So yeah, and that film has got Charlotte Gainsbourg in it and Marion Cotillard as well. Oh. So some big hefty, big hitter types in the film.
Right here. Okay. Well, that's great. Okay, well, that'll be coming up in the next edition of this show, in which we'll also be talking about Colossal and Film Club, which is the host. Do let us know any thoughts you have in the meantime at those usual addresses. Many thanks, Sophie, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoy that trip to Cannes, and you too, David.
Thank you. I will do.
We'll miss your po-faced...
Idiocy.
Idiocy. Yeah. Sophie, anything you want to add before you head off to Cannes?
Yes. So yesterday I saw Mindhorn, which you reviewed on last week's podcast.
Did you like it?
I liked it. I wasn't bowled over. But I did notice that it was dedicated to the memory of Julie Payne, and this week's film, Alien Covenant, was also dedicated to the memory of Julie Payne. So I looked up who she was, and she's Ridley Scott's long-term collaborator and the managing director of his company, Scott Free Films, his London office. And they've worked together since the 80s, and she died in 2016, age 64 of cancer. So I thought it might be nice to continue that in memory of and say, yeah, in memory of Julie Payne.
Nicely done, Sophie. All right, well, that's it for this edition of Truth and Movies. We'll see you next week. And remember, this has been a Seven Digital production.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.